This week we talk about spinning subscriptions, the idea that people will sign up for a service, watch a show, and then dump it again. We ask if this is the new norm, and we also discuss if it's time for SVOD providers to consider some different pricing models. Let's get started.
This week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media joins me from yet another new location this week. Colin, where are you?
I am in the beautiful Caribbean, and I'm actually here for a break, for a vacation, but I thought I'd take a few minutes out of my time in the beautiful island of Puerto Rico to talk about our business with you for a few minutes. And boy, there's been some interesting things happening this week. And I thought you made an extremely astute observation about how Hulu is positioning subscribing to its services. So tell us about this observation, Will.
Well, first of all, flattery will get you nowhere, Colin. So let's start with second is, astute observations only come along as commonly as the werewolf does in this industry. So if I had one, I appreciate your feedback on it. But yeah, the joking aside, I wrote a piece this week, Will Spinning Video Subscriptions Become a Thing? And the prompt here was that Hulu raised its price, as I'm guessing most of our listeners know. They raised their price for their Hulu Plus Live TV service from $45 a month to $55 a month. There's really no big surprise in that. All the virtual pay TV services have been raising their price. We know that already. But what Hulu did when they announced this price increase was something that I had not seen before from any of the video service providers, or even any other service provider outside the video industry that I could think of. And maybe there are other examples that I'm just blanking on, or maybe our listeners can think of one. But in its announcement, Hulu said, and I'm just going to quote here for a second, "Price changes are never easy to stomach, and we know that many people don't watch live television year-round. So we've made it easy for Hulu subscribers to switch back and forth between our plans to best suit their needs. If you love college football, choose Hulu Plus Live TV during the season, then switch to one of Hulu's less expensive on-demand plans when it's over. If you enjoy most of your TV on demand but really want to watch live election news, just switch to Hulu Plus Live TV for a few months." So they're explicitly encouraging subscribers to switch or spin, as I said, back and forth between different plans within Hulu. So take the live service, the more expensive now $55 a month live TV service when you want live programming, then downgrade to the SVOD service. And we're going to make your life easier to do it, to spin in and out of our plans. They're making that explicit value, that value proposition explicit to their subscribers. And it just got me wondering whether this concept of spinning video subscriptions will actually become a thing. So it's not hard to imagine the idea that somebody watches or wants to watch just one particular show that they've heard about on Amazon or on Apple TV Plus or on another one of the services. They're really not interested in starting or even maybe able to carry another service for $5 or $7 or $10 or $15 per month. So they're looking just to be able to get access to a particular show or maybe a couple of shows. And this would be a way to accomplish that by spinning. And then the question becomes, might we see other services beyond Hulu put that explicit value proposition out there, meaning come spin into our service to be able to watch this particular show and then spin out of it when you're done? We recognize that it might be more than you want to bite off another monthly video subscription. So we're not going to ask you to do that. And we'll make it even more explicit and easier for you to do that. So said another way, is spam from one streaming service to another one going to become a thing? And I'm not sure what I think, to be perfectly honest. I think there's a case to be made that others like Hulu has now done will recognize that actually it would be beneficial to promote spinning, because at least they'll be able to get a customer, an at-bat with a subscriber, if you will, and that in the course of that at-bat, maybe they'll be able to expose them to other programming and they'll be able to hang on to them, and that they won't spin out, or they won't spin out in a week's time or a weekend's time. Maybe they'll hang in there for a month or 2 months, and that would be incremental revenue for them. So there's a case to be made that spinning would be worthwhile. Then, of course, there's another case to be made that what Hulu has done here or any other provider encouraging spinning is a somewhat dangerous thing to do, because you're, in a sense, making churn an even easier thing to do. And Hulu is certainly in the advantageous position of having both a live service and an SVOD service, the SVOD service now being just ad-supported SVOD service now being just $6 a month. So it's a relatively small bite. It's almost like putting in your account into suspend mode in a way that other accounts, other services sometimes allow. So that's sort of the case for anti-spinning and pro-spinning. And I have no idea whether it's going to become a thing, but what Hulu did certainly hit my radar, and I know it hit yours as well.
It did, Will. And yeah, this is a very, as I say, I thought this was a very astute observation of yours. I hadn't seen this. I've been a little bit disconnected for the last week, so I suppose it's understandable. But I will say that, as you say, Hulu is in a unique position because they are not a one-trick pony. They have two services, and you know, when they start rolling in Disney Plus and ESPN Plus into the sort of subscription experience, which I fully expect them to do, they can afford to say, hey, you know, you can switch in and out of our services very easily. The objective here is quite different for Hulu than it is for other SVOD services, right? Because Hulu is trying to keep you in the fold, in the family, with at least one or more services. You can't really say that if you're a CuriosityStream or Netflix or BritBox or an individual SVOD service. It's a very, very different situation. And I think I would be surprised to see them encouraging people to, quote, spin. I know a couple of services, I think they allow you to pause your subscription, but I think they're more sports oriented. And they're really, the idea there is at the end of the season, you can pause your subscription and then it's very easy to just pick it up at the beginning of the season next time. I just don't know that we'll see spinning as a industry initiative, Will. But certainly for some providers like Hulu, it certainly makes a lot of sense. And I think that's one of the things that Hulu has said consistently. They really are on the subscriber side. They say they want to give really good value to the subscriber, and this is one way of doing it, but still maintaining them inside the family. So I thought that was very interesting. The other thing that really I thought was interesting, I did catch in the news this week, was I think it was Moffitt Nathanson that said that they thought that Hulu Live now was the number one virtual MVPD with 2.7 million subscribers. Well, I bet next month it won't be with a $10 increase. That's a big increase, right? What do you think?
Well, yeah, to your point, they could experience a little spike in churn with the $10 rate increase. They may get some people taking them up on their offer to spin down to the SVOD service at $6 a month. Who knows? And again, I think the price increases by the virtual MVPDs is happening everywhere, so it's not surprising to see Hulu implement as well. They do have the fallback plan that we're talking about. Moffitt also had, related to what you just said, an interesting data point. I'm not going to remember the exact numbers, but I think basically saying that the over the last X number of years, and I can't remember the exact number, but over the last X number of years, traditional pay TV operators have lost, I believe it was 24 million subscribers, while virtual, they believe that the category of virtual providers is now about 9 million subscribers strong. So the net loss is about 15 million. I think they refer to that as, like, their name for it is the conversion rate from traditional to MVPD or some type of a label like that that I thought was very useful. And their point basically was that whereas virtual MVPDs at one point, not that long ago, like literally a year, year and a half ago, their gains were fully, if not more, offsetting the losses on the traditional side. Now the gap has opened up and opened up to an even bigger extent than it was before, which just basically reinforces the concern that any network owner would have at this point that their viewership is going to shrink, and hence the pivot that we're seeing from a lot of these networks to the direct-to-consumer model.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think I remember in that research seeing them saying that the conversion rate was falling, so it was quite high in the first instance, but now it's pretty low. I don't know that that's the case. I know that we are still seeing very good gains at Hulu Live. We're also seeing Sling TV to return to strength. And part of this could be just people switching from PS View, which of course PS View has announced that it will be shutting down early next year. So maybe the subscriber base there is already beginning to move to other services, and that's why we're seeing upticks in Sling TV and Hulu Live. So maybe that's what's going on there. But yeah, I know when I thought about virtual MVPDs and when we talked about them in the past, I've never really thought about them as substitutes for pay television in that way, that the pay television operators can, as it were, offset their losses by getting people to transition to a virtual MVPD that they own. Those businesses are pretty different profit-wise, and I think the same underlying problems that impact pay television also impact the virtual MVPDs, maybe more so, and that is really that the traditional big bundle model is really beginning to break down because of the huge increases in the cost of license fees that the license holders are demanding. So, you know, I don't really see where that's going, Will. So,
yeah, and I, you know, I think we've had this conversation on prior podcasts. I was maybe slightly more optimistic than you were about the role that virtual MVPDs could play in mitigating cord cutting, to the extent that the owners of some of them, whether it's Google of YouTube TV or AT&T of DirecTV Now, et cetera, were willing to essentially subsidize the unprofitable services in order to support other strategic businesses. In the case of Google and YouTube TV, the Google ad business. In the case of AT&T, the wireless business. Even arguably Disney, in the case of Hulu, with the other Disney businesses, et cetera. So I felt some sense of optimism about that, but I think all of that has kind of faded now that we've seen price increases from YouTube TV. We've seen complete pivot in strategy from AT&T. And I think now with the Hulu price increase, we see that Disney is, in a sense, looking for Hulu to stand on its own legs, not be subsidized in service of other businesses.
Right, right. But I have to tell you, I've been puzzling over this issue of getting people to subscribe to services and the issues that you're really talking about here with spinning, where people don't want to subscribe for some reason. And I was really thinking about it for not in the case of Hulu, where Hulu has an interest in allowing people to do that and others don't. And I was batting ideas around with George Marcellos, my friend George Marcellos over at Logisense. And we were talking about ideas of different pricing models. And I really think it's time for SVOD providers to start really thinking outside of the pure subscription box, Will. yes, spinning could be a problem, and you have to find if you're if that's your model, if subscription is your model, you really don't want people spinning it out in and out of your service. What you want is you want a more regular relationship with them. And what do you do if you can't get them to subscribe? And the problem for many of the services is that it's going to be tough, right? Because if you look at some of the data, for example, Hub Entertainment Research says that 29% of people planning to sign up for a new SVOD service say they will drop another subscription to do it. And another 37% say they will drop ones without favorite shows down the line. So we are getting to a situation where people are sort of resistant to just continuing to add new services to their entertainment portfolio. There's another issue that we don't talk about as well, and that's that people are pretty getting more sensitive about exposing personal data. I know very often I'll get to that subscription screen and think about giving all this personal information to this service and thinking, well, are they just going to be hacked and that all my personal information gets out there? And I found some research from the Advertising Research Foundation that sort of reinforces this idea. They said that the number of people willing to share some basic information like home address fell from 41% in 2018 to 31% in 2019. And the willingness to share an email fell from 61% to 54%. So I think there's a real problem here with people actually not wanting to share information with you, which also could be a problem in getting people to subscribe. There's also a bunch of people, it turns out that one in five Americans actually don't have a credit card, so they can't even enter a credit card and get in the subscription game, Will. So anyway, there's lots of reasons why I think SVOD providers should be thinking outside of this subscription box. And there are plenty of ways that they can go. The mobile world, yeah, they have subscription-only models, but they also have prepaid accounts, pay-as-you-go accounts, and you can buy top-up cards through supermarkets. And the idea I think that that I think operators need to be thinking about is, okay, so this person didn't want to subscribe. They're not going to subscribe to me because there's just one show they want to see. Is there a business model that I can offer them that would allow them to watch that show? Let me make a little bit of money from them because I'm not going to make money from them from a subscription, but also not cannibalize my subscribers. And there was one example that I think it's a great example of a company that did that, and that is Sky in the UK. Sky Satellite has been around forever, and basically the situation is that everybody that wanted Sky Sports channels under the existing business terms had it. So there was really no opportunity, I think, for Sky to sell deeper into that group. And it was a large group. It's a large group in the UK. About half people in the UK don't have pay TV. And it turns out that 70% of the UK population watch Premier League soccer, which is on the Sky Sports channels. So what Sky did was they came up with this thing called Now TV, and they actually have completely different business models here. They allow people to buy, for example, a mobile-only monthly pass for £5.99. They can buy Sky for the weekend for another price, just for the weekend. So if they want to watch, the last weekend of the Premier League, they can do that. They can buy that subscription. And Sky's been very clever about the pricing because they've made it so that if you wanted to do this on a regular basis, it would be very, very expensive to do so. And what they've done is they've actually increased the number of customer relationships. So anyway, I think there's a great opportunity here for SVOD providers to do something about the spinning idea and to capture people who are just reluctant to subscribe right now to their service. So anyway, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's really all that is really interesting. I think you identified all the key issues, and to the extent that the industry is getting more competitive with the launches of Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, what's still coming from Peacock and Warner Media, that as competition increases, figuring out ways to get new subscribers, new on-ramps to get new subscribers or even any incremental revenue is going to be critical for all these services. And clearly, as you point out, with Now TV, that they're an example of an innovator that's already doing some of this, and clearly it must be working for them or they wouldn't continue to do it. So it seems like it makes sense, but as you, I think, aptly pointed out, providers need to be careful that they don't get the balance out of whack and start driving cannibalization among subscribers who, as I was saying earlier with the spinning reference, really only want to watch one show, and they buy a weekend pass, they binge the show, and then they're gone. And you could even imagine the idea of apps being created that would allow subscribers to spin or take on those smaller bites, the weekend passes or week-long passes, whatever, in some kind of an automated fashion where you'd actually add the shows that you want to watch. They would get your subscription or passes queued up, and then it would log when you've watched the shows and automatically disable or keep adhere you to the passes that you bought in some way that became automated. And that would really change the dynamics of how the industry works. I don't think it's unthinkable for a Amazon or an Apple or even a Roku to try to embrace that sort of a role of managing passes or being a spinning, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of pretty interesting stuff there.
I remember, I don't know if you remember this, I did an interview with Chet Kanoja of the Aereo TV CEO at your conference, at your ad conference a few years ago, Will. One of the things he said really stuck with me. He said that at the time they were offering a daily subscription. And he said that there were a significant number of people who were paying for the service daily and on a monthly basis ended up spending more money than if they subscribed monthly. And I just, you know, that really stuck with me. And, you know, obviously Aereo was happy with them to do that if that's what they wanted to do. And if a S1 provider were to do that and to discover that, that's a great opportunity to convert that customer to a subscriber. Just tell them, hey, don't you know you've spent more than if you just subscribe monthly? Would you like to do that? And it's a great opportunity to upsell into a more regular relationship, into a subscription relationship. So anyway, I had to laugh. There was one other thing I had to laugh. Well, on the day that I published this piece on my site, Harvard Business Review published a piece saying pretty much the same thing. So so I think there's two voices at least that are advocating for S1 providers to start thinking about this. But you know what? I think we're pretty much out of time for today.
Yeah, we are just about out of time, Colin. And I think it's all really good stuff to ponder, especially as the industry gets ever more competitive. So guessing we will return to these topics in the future, right?
I'm sure we will.
All right, Colin, good chatting. Enjoy the rest of your trip. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News In-Screen Media Podcast.